Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Right now, some of you are harvesting, and most of you plan to join in the coming days and weeks. We'll get a markets update from Bruce Burnett of Glacier Markets Farm later in the program to lay out what farmers will be looking at once they have crops off the field and in the bin. We'll get an update on the situation of the Maple Leaf Foods hog slaughter plant in Brandon from Geraldine Witchers of the Manitoba Cooperator. But first, we look at a growing menace to Canadian farms, cybercrime. Hello, John, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben.
So, tell us about a particular situation in Southwest Ontario that you looked into.
So, I've heard of several incidents, actually, which led me to decide this was something that really needed to be looked at. And the biggest was when the AgriMarket Group, which is a large player in crop retail in Southern Ontario, ended up being hacked by a group that then locked down their computer systems. They eventually were good enough to send me some responses to questions about that, because they had been on the dark web where these things happened. They had been, the hackers had made public their name, and then the cybersecurity press ended up being on it and had made their name public. So we did discuss it a bit, but that was the big high profile one is when a major ag retailer had their email and their computer systems locked down.
And that wasn't it wasn't just their company information that got breached.
So when they breached their company information, they ended up getting the information of their customers, and that was what the hackers unfortunately that this incident was one of the first times that this major hacker group decided to try to auction off the data. Usually they ask for a ransom or demanded a ransom. And the AgriMarket Group, as they said, is consistent with their system there, and what was recommended to them, refused to pay the ransom. So this hacker group decided to try to auction off the information, and among that, in the examples that they put out, that they had included personal information of farmers.
And what kind of personal information?
So it was basically credit checks. So what they had put out included social insurance number. They did blank out most of the information, although I was able to guess by a bit of the information there which farmer it was, and I was able to contact them and have a chat about them. They weren't all that excited, but interestingly enough, that farmer actually had their information on their farm hacked at one point, and hackers had accessed their bank account. So that farmer was part of the larger corporate hack, had also already been hacked himself. So I think it's probably more common than we realize.
And what can happen if someone gets your information, like a credit application, auctions it off on the dark web? Maybe you don't know about it, maybe you do. But what can happen if someone gets that information? What can they do against you?
So it's really up to for debate how much they do. If you know that they've got it, then it's much more difficult for them to do it. The banks have come a long, long way in monitoring for that sort of for the sort of activity that's not regular. And then if you let them know that they're even more vigilant. So your social insurance number, for example, can can be used to create, to impersonate you, to get credit, to to buy services, that sort of thing. And then if they have banking information, then they can actually get into your bank account, right? That it doesn't always get to that point, but certainly some do. So so it's certainly a concern for any business, because it's it happens more easily and all of a sudden than you would expect, and it is almost always somebody within your own organization that opens the door.
And not, they don't always know that they've opened the door. Sometimes you're like, it isn't like someone being a deliberate agent of a hacker. Someone can do this quite just not realizing they opened the wrong link in an email, right?
That's it. I wouldn't want to accuse anybody who's working for anybody in the ad code community of purposely working with a hacker, because that's extraordinarily rare if never seen. It is, and as one cybersecurity expert talked to, he said it's almost always hands on the keyboard, is what he said. So it's your employee's hands, your hands on the keyboard, clicking something you shouldn't click. And that just basically opens the door. So, and you're right. I mean, it may be something that came from your bank, and then you open up a door that way. But it can also just be you might click on something and go, oh, that was kind of weird. What was that? Oh, I don't know. I'll just delete that. But then they can actually have a backdoor into your system, and you don't even necessarily realize it. And they may never do anything. Like, it may sit there for years and they may never use it. Or you never know. There could be sometime they could make use of it if they want. It's kind of like someone with a key to your house without you realizing they have a key to your house. They may never enter it, may never do it, but the potential is there. And where that gets to be a concern in agriculture, from some of the cybersecurity experts I talk to, is more and more state side actors, countries or agencies that essentially are finding ways of opening doors, with the idea that someday, if they needed them, they could use it. And the one cybersecurity lab at the University of Guelph says imagine if they turned all the fans off in your chicken barn, or played with the ventilation in your cold storage unit for apples or something like that. So I said those are the sort of things that may never happen, but is becoming an increasing concern for cybersecurity experts relating to food security.
And what can you do about this? How do you protect yourself?
So it's worth looking it up. I'll give you a bit of a list that people have given me, and it's what they call good data hygiene. It's not, not ignoring your spam filters. It's actually paying for a spam filter if you need to. If you're a larger operation, it may mean talking to somebody, a cybersecurity expert. But then there's just some very simple things. Things we've heard before, but do them. Don't share passwords among multiple accounts. Change your passwords every 3 months. You have some sort of personal firewalls. There's a whole other conversation around, as we're adding more sensors and data sharing, are your data sharing partners also protected, right? Or can they be a route into your firms? So have a conversation with your data sharing partners about and demand that they have they can provide an understanding of what they've done. So farmers have numerous devices. Say if you're thinking your tractor cab or your sprayer cab, you'll have numerous devices, and you have multiple people using those different devices, and each of those people know the password. So you have to think through that system as well. And then there's redundancies you can also use, such as offsite, a backup of your data. So if someone comes in and locks your data, if you have a firewall offsite, then you at least have a copy of most of it. So, a cybersecurity expert told me you would be amazed that even after someone knows they have a breach, how many months it takes before they actually change their passwords. So people are really, people really just don't get around to it. And, increasingly when you're running significantly complex systems that have a lot of your information, it's probably something you need to think about.
Well, it's pretty scary stuff, John. I got to say, frankly, this is stuff a lot of people have not necessarily integrated into running a farm, that you could be this exposed to a breach beyond just the everyday stuff, even through your service providers like input people or other data folks.
Yeah, I mean, there's things you can do about it, but it is something that very few people think about, and the experts that I talked to were glad to talk to me because it said they're seeing more activity aimed at farms. And farmers are in the country, they don't usually think about this type of stuff. But as we're all connected and more connected, it's becoming something more to think about.
No doubt. So, well, thank you very much, John, for joining us today to lay this out for us.
No problem. Take care, Ed.
John Gregg is editor of Farm Terrio. This is Between the Rows. Farmers rely upon just-in-time delivery for many elements of hog production. That can include feed, veterinary supplies, replacement pigs. There isn't much room for delays or shutdowns. That's why many hog producers have been alarmed at news that dozens of workers at Maple Leaf Foods hog slaughter plant in Brandon have become infected with COVID-19. I'm joined by Geraldine Witchers of the Manitoba Cooperator to talk about the situation. Hello, Geraldine, and welcome to the show.
Hi.
So, can you sum up for us basically what is the situation at the Brandon plant?
All right. Well, at this point, the Maple Leaf Foods plant in Brandon is open, though there are about 300 workers or so in self-isolation at the moment. And between 34 and 62 active cases there as of yesterday. I give that range because the union and the province disagree on the numbers. The union says there are 62 active cases there. However, with people being in quarantine, people calling in sick, and some people on vacation, the plant is definitely falling behind in production. When I spoke to Union President Jeff Traeger yesterday, he said the company is asking workers to do overtime almost every day to try to get back on track. This last weekend, they asked for workers to volunteer for overtime. And when they didn't get enough volunteers to run a full shift, Traeger said the company used a provision in their contract to force between 450 and 500 workers to come in on Saturday to kill pigs. The company said this was because the backlog is an animal welfare issue and they want to prevent a crisis. Of course, we might recall that when the plants in North Dakota and Minnesota closed earlier this year, barn space quickly ran out and there had to be pigs euthanized. It seems that they're trying to prevent that kind of situation. Manitoba Pork has said that it's going to make every effort to relocate hogs if the plants shut down. And it seemed it's already working to prevent that kind of backlog. Yesterday, their general manager, Andrew Dixon, told me that thousands of pigs are being rerouted to other federally inspected plants. Of course, this is going to cost producers extra in transport at a time when prices really aren't that great.
And what is Manitoba's chief medical officer saying about the situation? What's his take on, the nature of the outbreak and where it goes from here?
Well, there's no hint that they're thinking about shutting down the plant. The top doctor, Dr. Rusin, has told media over and over that there's no evidence that COVID-19 is being transmitted between workers at the workplace. The province has repeatedly said that Maple Leaf is going above and beyond in their safety measures. And Maple Leaf has said that it's doing daily health and temperature checks. It's requiring masks, reinforcing social distancing, and has also put up plexiglass barriers between workstations. But even if there is evidence of workplace transmission, it seems, based on things Dr. Rusin said yesterday, that even then a shutdown wouldn't be their first option. I'm not sure that he gave any specific details on what their options would be, but it seems to be that shutdown isn't even on their radar at the moment.
And, you know, for our listeners who are not in Manitoba and who probably aren't hearing the daily updates on the Manitoba situation, could you sum up what the situation is, you know, roughly or generally in Brandon and southwest Manitoba?
Well, Brandon and the southwest corner of the province have been kind of the hot spot for COVID-19 cases in Manitoba lately. Brandon had 114 active cases there as of yesterday. So the health region that includes Brandon is under the second highest level of restrictions in the provincial system. Basically, if you're out in public, you're wearing a mask. And with a few exceptions, gatherings have to be under 10 people.
With that being Manitoba's hotspot, essentially, for COVID-19, and the Brandon plant having around 2,000 employees, it must be some concern for everybody that this disease is going around in that area.
Yeah. Yesterday, a group of workers at the facility, through an organization called Migrante Manitoba, released an open letter to the province, and in that letter, they expressed fear and frustration. They say the province and the company keep saying that they're getting COVID-19 from each other outside of work, that they must be hanging out together after work, maybe, you know, going church together, having picnics, whatever. And the workers in question say that because they're immigrants, there's this perception that their culture puts them at a higher risk for contracting the virus. And they say that's not true. They're being very careful, and that the company is discriminating against them. The union told me that workers are kind of panicked and scared to bring the disease home. So both groups, the union and the letter writers, are calling for a temporary shutdown of the plant until the number of cases in Brandon drops.
And that would have a pretty devastating impact on hog farmers and those that rely on them, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. I think the consensus would be that there will be a backlog despite Manitoba Pork's best efforts to relocate those hogs.
And I can imagine with the upcoming, only a few days away, back to school season and the back to the office season after summer holidays, we're going to be watching this COVID-19 situation in Brandon and how that affects the plant pretty closely over the coming weeks and months.
I imagine we will. I mean, obviously we hope that the active cases in the plant drops, and it seems that they are dropping somewhat, but it sounds like as farmers are sort of soldiering along with harvest, any trips back into town are going to require masks, but from what I hear, they are kind of carrying on as best they can.
Well, thanks very much, Geraldine, for catching us up on this complicated situation.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Geraldine Witchers is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. And now to catch up with what's happening in the markets, I'm joined by Bruce Burnett, Director of Markets and Weather Information for Glacier Farm Media. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
So we are now into harvest in many parts of North America and other parts of the Northern Hemisphere. I guess, what are you seeing now in terms of how harvest in various places is beginning to impact the markets?
Well, we certainly, I think, saw a preponderance of the negative price action in the wheat markets over the past 2 or 3 weeks, mostly because of harvest activity, mostly, you know, in the U.S. as the winter wheat harvest wrapped up and the spring wheat harvest got underway. But we're now getting to the point where the harvest is beginning to wind down south of the border, so we're starting to see that pressure ease off. Across the ocean in Europe, essentially those crops have been harvested, and even the spring crops are now coming off. So things like spring barley are essentially in the bin. But there are mixed reports on yields. The good yields or better yields in parts of eastern Russia are sort of being counterbalanced by some pretty poor yields in most of the main EU countries. So Germany and France especially are reporting some low yields this year. Drought has been the issue there. So I think right now we're starting to see the market stabilize and maybe focus a little bit more on what the demand picture is globally.
And What, I guess, are the biggest questions hanging out in front of the markets right now? What is it that people are most, I guess, unsure about as we see these new crops coming into the system?
Well, I think the thing is that up until now, or up until about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the market was pretty much convinced that because of large crops in the U.S. and other parts of the globe, that we were looking at some pretty robust supplies of wheat, corn, and soybeans especially. And that caused this sort of idea that we were maybe looking at, close to record crops. And I think on the wheat side, we probably will have a record crop globally this year. But for corn and soybeans, that switched around. We had the storm in Iowa and Illinois a couple of weeks ago. Crop tour has gone through, and really it has been quite dry in the U.S. Corn Belt through the month of August. So that will impact the filling of both corn and soybeans. So markets are now looking a little bit more at maybe smaller crops than they had originally expected. And at the same time, we're still seeing some very robust demand for both corn and soybeans from the U.S., specifically from China. So the market started to maybe paying a little bit more attention to the demand side of the picture, which has been quite strong for wheat, corn, and soybeans this year.
And commodity markets, crop markets are always affected by, the relative value of the U.S. dollar. There's been a lot of talk about that recently out there with U.S. dollar weakness. How are you seeing that impact, crop prices?
Well, it depends on exactly what crop you're talking about, but certainly that's one of the reasons I think that we're starting to see grain and oilseed prices move a bit higher here is because of the weaker U.S. dollar, and that would be specifically for commodities priced in U.S. dollars. Unfortunately, in Canada, a weaker U.S. dollar usually means a stronger loonie, and we are seeing that. And so that serves to maybe put a little bit of a damper on canola prices here. But the overall fundamentals in the vegetable oil market, and specifically in the canola market, look good, and that's helped push prices higher despite these headwinds that we're seeing from the currency.
And for the last 2 years, thousands of farmers in Western Canada, not all farmers, but certainly thousands, have faced dismal harvesting conditions. And I think a lot of farmers are pretty traumatized by what they lived through for the last couple of years. And I'm sure they're not going to be able to rest too easily until their crops are closer to safety than they are right now. I was hoping you could sum up for us looking at the crops of Western Canada, how far are farmers in the different areas from some level of relative safety where they won't, be so vulnerable to so many losses like they took over the last couple of years?
Well, certainly it does vary widely between the regions. In the southern growing areas, from Manitoba through to southern Alberta, and by this I mean I'm meaning south of the Trans-Canada Highway, those areas are well along in terms of harvest. They've managed to get most of the earlier crops in, the pulses, the winter wheat, the barleys, and now we're focused in those areas specifically on the spring wheat and durum harvest. So that's going pretty well there. As you move up into the more central regions, it depends on what part of the prairies you're talking about, but certainly from central Manitoba, central Saskatchewan, you're looking at some harvest underway of crops like the winter wheat, winter rye, and barley as well. And we'll be starting to move into the spring wheat here before the end of August here. So those areas, I think, are in pretty good shape. As you move over into Alberta, though, because of the cooler temperatures and the excess moisture conditions, especially up in the northern areas, we're still quite a ways away from harvest. Crops in northern Alberta, Peace River region, are about 2 weeks behind normal, maybe even a little bit longer, more behind normal. And that's even with these warm conditions that we've had over the past couple of weeks. So that's the area that we're still probably most worried about. As you move into Saskatchewan, the northern growing areas vary widely as well. In the northeastern parts of Saskatchewan, dipping over into northwestern Manitoba, you're actually seeing a fairly robust early harvest activity, and it's because these regions were fairly dry as you went through the growing season, and that pushed crops along very quickly, as well as they received the heat. Up in northwestern Saskatchewan, a little bit more like Alberta, they're a few weeks away from general harvest yet, and cross your fingers that we can get through the middle, the first half of September without any frost. There is going to be a big change in the weather pattern here at the end of August, where we're going to see our first outbreak of Arctic air into the prairies, and we're going to see temperatures drop into the teens for a few days. But right now, it looks as if there isn't going to be that same kind of weather pattern that delayed harvest over the past couple of weeks. So hopefully we can stay away from that. But unfortunately, we're going to see a break in this very, very hot weather that's helped spur harvest activity.
I'll bet there are thousands of farmers out there just praying that we can limp through with normal enough weather to just get that crop off and not have another winter of tough grain in the bin, and trying to manage a challenge crop in the bin situation.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, again, the initial quality that we're seeing from some of the harvest is very good. So you would like to see that quality continue as we move into the central and northern growing areas this year, rather than seeing a sharp drop off due to rains or other impacts on crop quality.
Well, thanks very much, Bruce, for catching us up on this.
Okay, thank you.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Markets and Weather Information for Glacier Markets Farm.
That's all for this week. Please join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, and I wish you all happy farming.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's Sparkle Sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.